on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Well, after all those sound problems at the start, welcome to the Orient Hour on this Wednesday evening in a rather drizzly Brentwood. I'm joined in the studio by Darren Burrows and Trevor Singfield, and hopefully on the line by David Victor. Are you there, Dave?
I am, Andy. How are you?
I'm all right, my friend. It's one of those weeks, isn't it?
Often is, isn't it? But yes, Saturday does feel a long way away. That's a long time ago, rather.
Yeah, well, I mean, you saw the game, and the guys here saw the game. And Trev, first of all, what was your impression of the match?
Well, struggling to watch it with the rather large shadow over the pitch from the Justin Ebron stand. So, yeah, I'm struggling to watch it on the tablet in the pub. But overall, I think the result was probably a fair result, 2-2. I thought Mansfield's actual outfield goal matched Sartorio's equaliser. So both quite good goals. Definitely a penalty for Mansfield. And James made up for it at the end. But overall, I think I was told Mansfield one of the favourite teams to go up this year. So maybe points lost if we can come out the traps a bit earlier. But yeah, 2-2. We'd probably take that at the start of the game.
I mean, Dave, what was your overall view of it?
Well, I think what I've been really impressed with since the start of the season is the fitness of the players. Now, we know that they went back before any of the other squads in League Two, and I think it's beginning to show. You just have to look at the number of late goals scored and also the belief. It was something that Ross Embleton alluded to on Tuesday with that victory over Plymouth Argyle. You know, the way in which the team came under enormous pressure. But he said that, you know, he believed in the system. He believed in what the side could achieve. And what was really impressive was the players sort of followed him. So there's a resolve about this team at the moment. There's a determination. And, you know, the way in which they came back against a very, very good Mansfield Town team. Now, this is a side that underachieved last season. They've still got some very good players from the investment, a big investment they made the previous summer. They've invested even more with some good players coming in. Of course, Coughlin now looking at his first full season in charge. They came with high spirits after a goalless draw against Tranmere Rovers, which I think will be another side that are pushing at the top. And to come back from two goals down against that Mansfield Town type side takes some doing. And that's exactly what Leighton Orient did. And I think the substitutes had a big impact, and Joby McEnough. Well, we know all about what Joby brings to the team, and he again had a big impact. But Louis Dennis has really impressed me. You know, he's had a difficult summer. He's had that injury, so he hasn't had the full pre-season training, but he looks so sharp when he comes in. And Musa Turio, another player that's not had the full pre-season, another player that's had a few injury difficulties of late, but he has looked so sharp in the last two matches. He is so ambitious. He just looks for goal, and more often than not, he looks as if he's going to find it. And we haven't even mentioned the man of the moment, DJ Danny Johnson. He just works so hard without the ball, and that's why he earns that little bit of space, and he only needs one chance. And at the moment, his goal per game ratio, phenomenal.
It is indeed. Darren?
Yeah, I think what pleases me at the moment, Ian, is the bench. If you look at the situation, we're 2-0 down with 10 to go, but we've got a good bench, haven't we? We've got a lot of fit players. The squad seems fairly fit at the moment. So that's something I sort of picked up on, really. I was pleased to see that Joby came on and made a big difference, didn't he? Did make a big impact. And the other thing, I would perhaps take slight issue with Dave over the early season, getting back. I think that we have had a good start, so it's definitely paying off, but I worry about that over the course of a full season, whether that is the right thing to do. Just a little observation, really, more on the overall than the match.
Well, Dave, I mean, the match itself, you say, the team is showing a lot of real spirit there, aren't they? I mean, it's not the first time, as you know. The comeback against Plymouth was one thing, and for them to do it again, and they were outplayed for long periods, weren't they, on Saturday?
I'm not sure if it goes far as saying outplayed. I mean, it was against a very good team, and Leighton Orient this season do concede a degree of possession. And again, I think that's because they're comfortable in sort of their own skins and their own organisation. You know, Mansfield had to have a mistake, and it was a mistake from James Brophy. I think it was bad decision making on his behalf that gave the Stags that advantage. And up until then, they had a couple of clear cut chances. But to be honest, particularly when you think of the difficulties that Ross had, we now know about the problems he had in terms of defenders that weren't available to him. I thought the defence had held up very well under mounting pressure. I thought they worked very hard in midfield against a very, very strong Mansfield side. I think O'Keefe is going to be a standout player this season on Mansfield's right. So, yes, and Andy Cook, I think he's lost 10 kilos during the summer. He scored a lot of goals when he was at Tranmere Rovers, of course, and I think he's got a point to prove. They've got a lot of competition in their attack, so we got a point off a good team. We remain unbeaten, and I think our options up front are really exciting.
Yeah, I'd echo what Dave's saying. I do feel that it's early, isn't it, as we all know, a few games in, but I still do feel that the defence perhaps still, you know, I personally think that centre-half is still needed, personally.
Right. I mean, Dave, we're going to have Danny on shortly ringing in, but your initial feelings over this COVID outbreak affecting the club, I mean, it's a bit of a big shock for everybody, wasn't it?
It was. I mean, I think it's been sort of common knowledge that there's been one or two players that have not been feeling well, and Ross has made the point that, you know, players have been putting their bodies on the line, and I think, again, full credit, they're unbeaten. They've won four of their first five competitive games under very difficult circumstances. You know just how difficult it is. Now, it'll be fascinating to hear what Danny says about the testing. It's been fascinating to see what's happened with Hull City, who apparently were offered the opportunity to test and didn't. You know, it's a complex situation. It is very much you know, a year 2020 type situation. You know, we everything has changed since March, the last 6 months. Absolutely incredible, and you just think that you've adopted and adapted to something, and then everything changes again.
I mean, you see inconsistencies again when we've seen it in policy that's been introduced in the last 6 months, and now we're seeing it in football where, as you just said, Hull City decide, oh, well, we don't want to cause any problems, and that down the line we won't have any tests, and Orient go ahead and have the tests, and you've seen the two outcomes. Hull get their money, or they're knocked out, but they get their money, no problem. Orient, you know, are battling away there over this, and it's just an inconsistency after inconsistency over this, over COVID in sport and in everyday life.
And battling, I think, is the the term to use, and I think battling on behalf of Leighton Orient is Nigel Travis. I felt so proud listening to him on Talk Sport and also watching him on Sky News, because he wasn't just talking about Leighton Orient and defending Leighton Orient. He was talking about the game. He was talking about the need to protect clubs like Leighton Orient. And I think the decision that has been made about supporters and not being allowed into the ground is an astonishing one, and one that I really, really worry about. I can't see the logic, Andy, that we had these test events. We know that Brighton Hove Albion was one of them. You know, you've got supporters that are having their temperatures taken, having their hands sanitised, have lots and lots of space in the open air to watch a football match. They're no longer allowed to do that, but they can go into a pub and they can stand with their mates and they can have a drink and they can watch the exact same match. All we're asking for in this situation is some logic, please.
Trevor.
Yeah, good evening, Dave. Just a question for you. You've watched the Orient on the road this year. How have you found our opponents' COVID precautions? Are they of a very good standard? Because obviously clubs have got different budgets. And how you found that compared to what has been offered over the O's, and obviously with the one who's fallen foul of the COVID virus at the moment?
Yes, I mean, when you say fallen foul, it's testing, and not, you know, that's very different to falling foul. I don't think, positive tests are strange things. West Ham United have had positive tests, and, it is about testing. One of the main differences you see, and you also see it at the Brea Group Stadium, is that the teams change in different areas. So at the Brea Group Stadium, they're in the Legends Lounge now, aren't they, the visitors? At Forest Green Rovers, you had Forest Green in the first team changing rooms, and Leighton Orient were changing at the other end of the stadium in changing rooms, which I assume are for normally the practice pitches behind the main stand. At Oldham Athletic, there was a lot of precautions, as you'd expect. Everyone has their temperature checked. Northampton was interesting because they had arrows absolutely everywhere, but you'd follow the arrows and the stewards would be telling you you're going the wrong way, and it was impossible to get following the arrows back from the toilet up to the press box again. These things are complicated and these things are difficult. If I can make a comment, Brisbane Road and the way in which the staff have worked at Brisbane Road is really impressive, especially when you go and compare it to other clubs. Forest Green were very, very tight and very specific. You weren't allowed to leave your row unless you were going to the toilet. They were really, really specific. But what I couldn't understand was why there was...
If they wanted to go to the toilet, like if they were going to the toilet.
If anybody from the press wanted to.
Yeah.
But there was litter in the stand. You know, that must have been there from last season. Northampton Town were also very strict. But there was litter, in the corners. And you think, wow, we haven't played since March. Where did this come from?
Yeah.
And again, you're so proud of Leighton Orient, because that's the last thing you'd see. Everything is clean. Everything is spotless. And everything as it should be, which is why it's so harsh on Leighton Orient that they're making the headlines at the moment around COVID, because I think they've tried extremely hard and have gone the extra mile. And they did the right thing.
Yeah.
They did the right thing by getting the test.
Well, Dave, we're going to have to bail you out because Danny's going to be ringing in a couple of minutes' time. The Orient, I think if it hadn't been Orient, it would have been another club, wouldn't it? I mean, we've just seen Plymouth have got a couple of tested positive, as we know West Ham have. It was just going to happen eventually anyway, wasn't it?
Yes, I think Nigel Travis was saying so clearly, it would be wrong for a team or a club to be punished because they have a test. Because that would be making such a statement, and you'd have other clubs like Oldham and Hull City, rather, that have refused the test, and they're the clubs you have to worry about. That's the situation that you really got to be careful of.
All right, Dave, lovely to speak to you, mate, and you take care. We'll see you soon.
Cheers.
Well, there you go. That was Dulcet Dave. Nice to hear his tones. And anyway, he made a lot of sense as usual, Trevor.
Yeah, I thought we could have been going back to the days when you got changed over the railway. carriages over marshes, you know. So, but yeah, he did. It was good to hear what he said about the other clubs because I was very interested in that. And he's the man to ask, isn't he?
Anyway, I think if I press the right button, we should have Danny on the end of the line, actually. Danny, are you there?
Good evening, gents.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
It's happening to us again. It's been, what a club we're at the moment. If it's not one thing, it's another, isn't it? It's just that we get over one hurdle, something else hits us. But you're all bouncing back straight away and fighting, coming out fighting. And it just seems to be uphill battles, doesn't it, after uphill battles?
I think as a club, we've faced every crisis. We face it together as a team. We face it together with the fans. And, this one... will be no different in terms of this. And yeah, first and foremost, the health and well-being of everyone connected to Lake Lorient is now as more pertinent and more relevant than it ever has been. I think that's the one thing I want to get across tonight is, you know, now's the time to adhere to every safety measure that there possibly is. Every message that's been given by the government's been given for a reason, and it's a very pertinent message.
Yeah, I mean, Danny, I mean, we just touched on it with Dave, the very last thing we said to him. It was going to happen anyway, wasn't it? Eventually, if not to Lake Norrin, to a club, and as we just said, Plymouth, West Ham, just to name two, it had to happen.
I guess as there are more cases across the country, sadly, that's probably sadly inevitable. It doesn't make it any more of a surprise that we have had the cases that have been reported, but it's something that we very much want to come through, and we will clearly come through it. And it's something that it hopefully will be a warning sign to other clubs to make sure that there aren't any issues their end in terms of processes, etc.
Darren,
Danny, can I ask? I know it's very early, and possibly you can't answer this, but any news on Saturday?
We continue our dialogue with all parties on that. There's going to be a lot that I'd probably use that strap line over the next few questions. And yeah, we're in dialogue with the EFL in regard to the Tottenham postponed game and in regard to the upcoming fixture.
Well, it's all happening. I mean, lots of questions coming in. I know you've seen some of them, Danny. On the testing, Tuffers has asked on the message board, what is the differences between graded tests and the tests the EFL do? Price-wise and results-wise, are they different from the NHS tests?
Price-wise is minimal. Now, I'm not a medical expert, and I'll leave that to the experts.
You're not? All right.
Yeah, there are different tests. There is, and to be honest, I've learned more over the last 48 hours of the differences between the two. But effectively, there's what I always thought was a yes-no test, and then there is basically a gradient, which is based on a percentile grade. I won't pretend to understand what each of those are, but yeah, effectively, there are different levels, I guess, in the same way that of an alcohol test. You're either over it or under it, but there are obviously different bands within it.
Right. Now, I mean, top of the JES, I mean, his point really is, Danny, that when nine players and staff allegedly had the bug 10 days ago, didn't anyone at the club think to have the test done then?
I'll ask to repeat that question.
So from the top of the JES on the message board, when nine players and staff had what he put in commas the bug 10 days ago, in other words, there were some players reporting not too well, did no one at the club think of doing a test then?
We believe that we followed the protocol of what's in there in terms of, you know, if someone is displaying actual COVID known symptoms, then of course that would go through the testing regime. I'm not going to go into the intrinsic detail of this. We're clearly, you know, going to review everything alongside the EFL. It's not a closed book, but in the fairness of time, we can, you know, all look about that and talk about it. But yeah, you know, our priority at the moment is on the health and well-being of our players. And on that matter, you know, the absolute majority of those that have tested positive are asymptomatic and are showing none or very, very few symptoms. And that's, you know, the majority of those, vast majority of those.
Good. Well, it's good to know they're not actually feeling unwell. That's good news indeed. Prestige Worldwide on the message board. It looks like no fans till March, if at all. What can you do for season ticket holders who have paid their money expecting admission at some point?
I think we can still hope that there would be admission. Obviously, at the moment, there's lots up in the air in terms of when we'll be able to welcome fans back. We will be continuing to push the government that when it's at the right time, you know, this is an outdoor facility, obviously, at the Braybrook Stadium, as it is in every stadium in the country, and it's something that we're pushing for, that when it's deemed safe to do so, we will be as prepared as we can be, and any club would be, to welcome fans back. And I hope, you know, season card holders won't have to wait a huge amount of time with that, and say, hopefully, the majority, which I know have enjoyed the streaming service, aside from the 15 minutes of external sound issues we had on the last game. But it is, you know, very much, we hope the fans will be back, and we'll be looking at ways that we can reward and engage even further than we ever have before, which is saying something with our season card holders. I can't thank enough on behalf of everyone at the club that the loyalty and the support that are, not just our season card holders, but, you know, specifically in relation to this, that they have shown you know, this club down the years, but even more so in the last 6 or so months.
Yeah, I mean, Ken Leo, what is the club's budget for COVID testing, if there is one?
It's not so much a budget, because it's not something that you set in your budget years ago. We clearly do what is basically required of the EFL regulations. So those testing requirements we completely adhere to in terms of when they have to be conducted. If anything, we went over and above what those requirements were. So it's not so much something that you budget for. It's just something that is done based on what is the requirements that the government are advising, and in turn, the EFL.
Trevor.
Yeah, good evening, Danny. Can I just ask you a few questions? How many season card holders did tune in for the streaming? Did you get them kind of figures?
Do you know what? I should know that off the top of my head, but with the last 48 hours, it's not there.
Okay,
we sold around about 1,000 passes for the Mansfield game, and it was a very large chunk of season card holders, but I'd be lying if I gave you a figure, but a very large chunk. I think it's worth bearing in mind, as obviously if you sat at home with your wife or your husband watching the game, you may have only used one of your codes. Wouldn't count as twice, if that makes sense. So the figure's slightly skewed, but it was the feedback we've had has been really, really strong. There's bits that we clearly want to further improve, but so far, I think, you know, we're seeing virtually every club look at what we're doing from a streaming point of view, and, you know, asking how we're doing it, and, you know, they're wanting to copy suit.
So we are picking off of what Colchester put out on their website about the iFollow thing. If I just read a small bit about it, it says currently our home team keep all their revenue for the tickets they sell through their own website, and they also get the revenue for the first 500 that buy the away team. For example, Saturday's game against Bolton, they sold 452 iFollow passes, so they keep the revenue for that, but Bolton sold 2,252, and of which they only get the revenue for the first 500. It's put a new aspect, they say, on the revenue available to the clubs this season. So it's saying Bolton made more money in gate receipts from Colchester's home fixture as we did the revenue, and it carries on. It says that they would have expected £54,000 in home gate receipts from that fixture, but received just shy of £8,000, whereas Bolton would have got £600 for the 5% commission we pay them, but they received £14,000 more. So over the course of a season, Bolton would gain, just for their away sales, is £345,000. How did the iFollow figures were negotiated, and do you think this is a rather skewed area of the streaming passes?
Yeah, so let's go back a stage there. So first of all, I thought Robbie's statement was brilliant. Robbie's an exceptionally good chairman. In terms of how it was negotiated, as it is with pretty much most league matters, it's done by vote, by division, and then overall across all 71/72 clubs. What we wanted was to make sure there was a consistent sort of offering. I think that was absolutely critical for ease of administration, but more importantly that, for ease of fans understanding it. The split of the model is not the model that we actually voted for. We wanted to, I think the phrase is, sow what you seed, and we wanted to be able to keep the revenue that we generate from our fans. Now, we've probably got a middle compromise in exactly the scenario that Colchester statement's just been read out, and it's probably not fair, as a bit of background. This, what would normally happen if an away team, let's pick Bolton, we're coming to the Braybrook Stadium, for advanced ticket sales, we would take 5% of the money of tickets that have been purchased in advance, and the visiting club would keep the sorry, the other way around, we've kept the 95 and passed the 5% on. So the model is different anyway, but it is, the reality is that is what the model is, and we have to make the most of it. Clearly, there are clubs that are bigger that are going to earn more revenue from it, but that applies when there's crowds. You know, the likes of Bolton and Sunderland in League One, for example, are clearly going to earn more from streaming because they've got a bigger audience to reach, in the same way they've got a bigger audience to fill the stadium for life, for example.
Danny, it's Darren. If I can ask a question, can you say anything along the lines of do you expect, basically, Danny, 24 clubs to survive till March in League Two if we can't get fans back in the stadium? Is that a concern you have?
I think there's a grave danger that 24, or if you look at another way, the 72 won't be a 72. Obviously, become a 71 for a temporary period. That was bad enough. There needs to be action. There is enough money within the game of football to make sure that a club doesn't go to the wall. It would be absolutely tragic if there was to be a club that would do that. But the longer we go without crowds and without financial support to negate that, it's going to become very challenging for a number of the clubs. And we only have to look at, we've obviously got fondness looking back at non-league football. There's a real doubt now over when they're going to even start their games. I think we might have got out of that at the right time, but we've got every sympathy for the friends that we made in the National League and the structure below that, and it's a real concern of the whole of the pyramid structure of football. And I think I've said before, an Orient Hour, football has to reset itself, and I'm not sure it's even looked at where the reset button is of the game yet.
Well, I agree with you, Danny, that they need help, the football clubs across the board here. Now, I made a statement earlier on social media that something along the lines of what the government did for the supermarkets, for argument's sake, was to waive the business rates. Now, in Tesco's case, that's something around about a £700 million waiver. Now, is that sort of something that could possibly be something the football clubs are pushing for? I'm taking it that the business rates bill for Leighton Orient, the rates is quite a high bill?
It's not, actually. I saw your thing and thought, Andy's got a good idea, but it is, don't get me wrong, it's not a huge amount, but any amount is a huge amount as a club that loses £2.5 million. So if it was getting the milk bill free, it would help. Every little helps. The business rates for the financial year that we're in have been wavered for us, but as it has with pretty much every hospitality venue for the 12-month period that we're now in.
Good. Okay, well, it's just an idea, and it's obviously one that they've already operated on. I mean, what sort of government help would you be pushing for as a football club, then?
I think there's many different factors, and I don't think it's just the government. You know, the government have got every industry, whether it's the airline, the automotive, hospitality sector, they've got every door being knocked. But I believe there is enough money within the upper echelons of this game to make sure that the pyramid of football that we are all so proud of, as a country, and with the envy of every country across the world, there is enough money to sustain and make that pyramid not just survive but thrive as well.
Well, I think the authorities, the footballing authorities, really, in a way, they have got to. They're responsible for saying the season's going to start, and once they tell you it's going to start, you've all financially committed, you've all taken on contracts with new players, etc. Your commercial contracts have been signed on the promise that we are going to be starting, even in the middle of a pandemic. We're going to be starting then. That's definitely the start date. So you've all committed, and now this has happened. So I think they have got a duty of care to you all, and I do believe they've got a responsibility to sort out some sort of financial reimbursement to football, not just the league clubs, but going right down the pyramid.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Darren?
Just picking up on the season ticket situation, Danny. We've got the streaming, which I think we're already pleased. It doesn't beat being there, but it's certainly welcome. I think as fans, we're all enjoying that. And we're getting that for free, but practically we're getting that instead of getting into the ground, is the way I look at it. I for one, I just want to put it out there. I think that we should, as fans, basically donate that money to the club over the course of the season. Now, it's easy for perhaps some of us to say that more than others, but I, for one, Danny, don't want my money back. I want the club to keep the money because I want the club to survive in the long term. So you can't perhaps say that, or perhaps you can, so I'll say it for you. Let's all just donate that money and see the club survive, because £2.5 million, it's not sustainable.
No, it's very kind of you to say that. The $2.5 million isn't sustainable because $1.5 million more than we had budgeted for, and that $2.5 million is as we stand today in terms of the loss that we are at this moment. It's all about budget that we're forecasting to make at this moment, and yeah, it's a lot higher than what we and the board had hoped for, and that is as we stand right at this moment.
Now, I know you can't stay too long, Danny, but just coming back to it, Nigel's made a case for Leighton Orient here about this tie with Spurs. But bottom line, just looking at it, and correct me if we're wrong, you know, the EFL, you've joined a league, you agree to abide by their rules, their findings. They've listed their set of rules as regards if a player or a person is ill and if the fixture can't be fulfilled, etc. Now, Nigel sort of found a loophole in that. But bottom line, you agree to abide by their decisions, don't you, and their findings. So even if it goes against the grain, you're going against your membership, your agreed membership of that league by arguing it.
As I said at the top of it, we're in ongoing dialogue with the EFL, and I'm not going to, at this moment, I'd like to be able to share more in terms of some of the background and how we move forward with it, but today's not that day.
Okay, that's fair enough. I mean, on a percentage-wise, how hopeful are you that this game would eventually... Take place, or we'd advance, or what's going to happen?
I wouldn't put a percentage on it, but we are hopeful that the fixture would happen. I think the players, the football staff, and the club and the fans deserve that opportunity for us to pit our wits against however strong a Tottenham side would be put out. We'd earned that. Danny Johnson would certainly have welcomed, I think, running against some of the Tottenham defence along with the other players, and it is something that we hope. That we will see.
Okay, so just in closing then, I mean, Nigel said we had a team to put out, so if we were to get the green light for the weekend, what sort of side would the supporters be expecting to see? Because if the numbers are true of the players that are affected and trained together, etc., would we be looking at mostly a youth team being put out or something?
I think tonight, Wednesday night... Today is not Saturday. That's a bit of a cagey answer.
Ever the diplomat.
it's something that continues in dialogue. I sound like a politician there, but I'm not.
You're wasted. You should be.
We continue the dialogue with the EFL. So it sounds like a really boring answer, but that's the reality of it. And those discussions are ongoing throughout today and they will continue.
Well, I'll just say a big thank you, and I mean that, for coming on here tonight. I mean, Steve Nussbaum got in touch with me earlier from Outlook, and he said, yeah, can't believe Danny's actually coming on at this moment in time. So I think all kudos to you for sticking your head above the parapet and coming out and coming on the show, because I know it's, as you say, certain things you can't answer, but we do appreciate the fact that nobody's hidden behind this situation, and they've actually come out and said, no, we'll come on, we'll answer some questions. And so on behalf of everybody listening and the guys in here, thanks for joining us tonight, Danny. Enjoy the evening.
Yeah, and I'll just quickly add to that, guys, if I may, and say we've always been, Nigel Kent and the whole board, we're all about communication. We know that, and you know, whether it's a good time or a bad time, we will always continue that communication. And say there were fans that have reached out to us. I've got about 200 direct messages on Twitter, and I apologise, I've not gone back to them all. But we're very grateful for the support we're showing. Now's the time that, you know, obviously the... We hope that we'll be able to get fans back, and right now our focus is on the health. But I want to re-stress, there is, you know, the absolute vast majority of players that have tested positive are showing next to no, and in nearly all cases are showing no symptoms. And that I think that's the key message to get across. And thank you guys for your continued support. I shall now go back and listen to the rest of the show.
Thanks, Danny. Thanks for joining us, mate. Have a good evening.
And yeah, bye.
Well, that was Danny Macklin, of course, the Orient CEO. Did well there, didn't he, Trev?
he always fronts up himself, doesn't he? And I think over the period of time the new owners have been in, and myself personally, I never used to sort of listen to much that goes on YouTube or anything like that, but I find Nigel Travis and Kent T, when they do the question and answers, absolutely fascinating. And it's a must-watch thing now. Yeah, Danny doesn't shirk a question, and they say what they are, and they can. We're going to be approachable. We say yes or no. Yeah, he's got to sit on the fence now, of course, because the EFL, you don't know how long they're going to take to make a decision over what the Tottenham scenario, let alone what we can and can't do on Saturday, because I think we said before, would Walsall fancy playing us if they're not 100% sure that
absolutely, yeah,
that we've are completely free of any of our players showing any sign of a positive test.
Well, that's what we said, isn't it, Darren? I mean, we said that before we went on air. You know, if you're in the opposition camp, would you want to play a football team where that many people have been infected?
It's a very difficult one to answer, Andy. Putting myself in that situation, I would like to think that, well, I'm speaking very personally here, that the whole situation with COVID is now starting to get very, very, I think, mixed, muddled, confused. I don't think, frankly, anyone knows whether we're coming or going with this. So I think, in fairness, I can't answer that on behalf of Walsall. I can only answer it on behalf of myself and say that I want to get on with my life. So, yes, I would, Andy. I think it's fair to say that I would play the game.
Right. And just to touch on the rules as they are regarding this from the EFL, Rule 5.1, a club which is unable to fulfil its obligation to complete a competition match in round 1, 2 and including round 4 due to either that club's players or player having returned a positive CAT result and self-isolating in accordance with the action plan set out in the return to play, return to training protocols, resulting in the club not having a sufficient number of players to fulfil the fixture, or any requirements or directions of the UK government and or by any public authority shall forfeit the fixture. Now, whilst we may argue the point that we didn't say we haven't got sufficient players, which is, I take it, is Nigel's take on this, having looked for the weaknesses, if you like, in anything they're saying, they have also got this in place here, any requirements or directions of the UK government, which may say that nobody from that area can take part in.
Whose decision was it to call the game off? The EFL's? Whose decision?
Well, I think that was government. I would say that was the government, isn't it, Trevor?
Well, I think Waltham Forest Council had something to do with it.
Which is local government, yeah.
But why couldn't we have just gotten the bus up to Tottenham and gone and played in the new White Hart Lane Stadium? I mean, I'd have been very upset and been out of go, but surely that is a COVID-free environment. The players that were available, or allegedly available, get on the bus, up you go, play the game, send Sky over there, we take the the £150,000 that was on offer. Oh, probably not as easy there, but I know, when I think Nigel did say Waltham Forest Council were the overriding thing about the actual stadium being...
I mean, we come back to what I touched on there with Danny, in that they are the rules. Now, Nigel and Danny and Kent would have dealt with many legal documents in their careers, obviously. I think Nigel's wife's a lawyer anyway, over in the States, and a lawyer's job, solicitor's job, look for the weaknesses in any case and highlight and go home in on that and tear it apart from there. But the bottom line is, if you're a member of that, as I said to Danny, if you joined a league, part of the agreement is you agree to abide by all rules and findings of that league. So, you know, you have to go along with it, as far as I'm concerned. And that's the bottom line. I mean, as far as I can see, I don't see where we've got a case, that personally, because I know we have, morally, but in the actual fact of things, we've signed to join that league under their rules and their findings. And their finding is, you're out.
But it goes back to the point, though, that we could put a team out. And as Trevor said, we could have moved this game 5 miles.
Yeah, could do, but they've got the caveat
in
there.
I don't think, caveat or not, Andy, that this is going to be a prevailing problem now. COVID, as we know, is here to stay.
Yeah, I agree with you.
So if they set a precedent here and they say, right, Orient are out, there's no second chance.
Yeah.
Are they going to do that to Man City? Are they going to do that in the Champions League if Liverpool get to the final?
Well, the question is, are we actually going to finish the season? Because what we were saying before we went on air, we were at this situation already after a handful of games where we finished the last season because of COVID. We are now in a situation where it's rearing its head again and we're getting problems that early on. I mean, my argument was we should have finished the properly the previous season first before we even worried about starting a new one, but everyone's entitled to their opinion on that one. But you know, the situation is now we would have finished last season properly, just as it's rearing its head again, and you would have had people relegated because they'd played the full amount of games and they deserved to be relegated, not on a possibility or a probability, because there's no probabilities in football. It's the most uncertain sport in the world. Otherwise, we'd all win the football pools every week.
We certainly know how Tranmere feel now a little bit, don't we?
Well, yeah. I mean, the thing is, as I've always said, in football, the only certainty is there aren't any certainties. You know, as I say, because otherwise we'd all go down the bookies every week and go, oh, Liverpool to win there, Arsenal to win there, and we'd all pick up our money and go home.
I just think it's the right, it's the moral, it's the sensible thing to do to try and get the game played. In every circumstances, the game should always be looked to be played.
Yeah. I mean, I think, in all honesty, I don't think Spurs were going to pull out a very strong side. I don't think they would. I think you've been a mixture of young players and maybe one or two of the under-23s and maybe somebody's coming back from injury. But I don't think it would have been a particularly strong Tottenham team with too many games for them.
There is the point now, though, that every time a situation comes in the Cup where a big club like Tottenham, a Premier League club, can say, well, we want your players tested. Yeah, before there's a game. And will they, and I'm not saying Spurs, I'm not suggesting this at all, but would another club, perhaps with a similar fixture pile-up as Spurs have got, say, well, actually, you never know, we get the players tested, one or two positive tests, and game off, bye to the next round.
Yeah, the thing is that, Darren, I agree with you there, but did anybody know this rule that a Premier League club say, well, we want A, B and C tested before we play you because we're going off to Macedonia? I mean, there's been positive tests at the West Ham Hull game. When did they know about them and at what time? And they went ahead with the game. They could have actually been a little bit sneaky knowing that they got the results to see what could be happening down the road at E10. And I thought, we ain't having none of that. And all of a sudden,
yeah,
you've now got West Ham with positive tests. And, oh, good old little old Leighton Orient, as Barry used to call us, are out of the cup.
Well, I think you've got to draw the line here, because the testing is diabolical. The fact that the powers that be are not financing it right through the game, because whether you're playing in front of 100 people in the non-league or playing in front of 50,000 people in the Premier League, you're a human being, you're taking part in the same business, the same job, same risk, close quarters with a lot of people, a lot of sweat, a lot of spittle, everything else. You should be treated with the same level of respect and the same level of care. Now, we know that the football's a better standard, but that's irrelevant. You know, these people are out there, you know, playing for 50 quid or whatever. They deserve to be looked after as well. And you've got this situation, I've forgotten the fella's name, you'll have to forgive me on that, but we've got this situation here where some people believe the virus is real and some people don't, and all this rubbish. And we had this back in the 50s where polio was really rife and people were either crippled or dying from polio, and they had the vaccine came out. And people, oh, I'm not taking that. That's not, you know, that's not going to work. It could do you in. It could make it worse, make things. And people weren't taking the vaccine seriously. They weren't trying it. And then a top footballer who played for Birmingham, and his name's escaped me, he played in the cup final in the mid-50s and everything. He took ill after a game on a Saturday. By the Monday, he's terribly ill. By midweek, he's paralysed. By the next week, he's dead. At that time, when somebody famous who was fit, top of his game, top-level sportsman, dies of polio, suddenly everyone takes it seriously and everyone started having the vaccines. And from then on, polio has obviously been, you know, dealt with. I'm wondering, you know, are we waiting for something serious to happen to a top-level sportsman before people, you know, take this thing seriously and everybody gets tested and everybody takes it seriously? I mean, it's worrying.
Well, you only have to go on the internet and you see that the Germans are getting decent-sized crowds back safely. And we're lacking behind. Is their test and trace better now? Is it probably, obviously, is the Germans are more disciplined people? But this every, like Darren said, on personal notes, everybody's got their own opinion of the virus. Will a top-level sportsman pass away from it? I very much doubt it, because, as what we all know, it affects older people. I mean, if I had played with the virus, you couldn't tell. They didn't look like nothing wrong with them Saturday, and to come back so well. And like Dave said at the start of the programme, we're very fit. So, you know, and the level of what's in them must be minimal, but it's the fact that it's there.
I think there's a Premier League player that did the bleep test and then had a coronavirus test an hour after, and he got on his bleep test, he got his highest ever marks. So it's Trevor's point that we know enough now about this horrid disease that it is unfortunately the elderly and the infirm that are affected the most. Yes, we know that it can affect younger people. But going back to the professional sports situation with the Premier League and the EFL, Andy, it was decided amongst the EFL members not to do testing from a financial point of view, that's my understanding.
Yeah, now,
the Premier
right.
League clubs can afford to do it. So this is, again, where we're getting this inconsistency when we play the Premier League clubs in the in the Cup, as we found out, to our cost. We do the right thing by getting tested, and credit Orient for that. Now, obviously, we would say that we're Orient fans, but they've done the right thing by doing it. Whole city have turned it down, and on they go. Well, they don't go on because they got knocked out, but you get my point, don't you, that they got to play the game.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's inconsistency, as we said before, once again. Now, coming back, I mean, poor Ross, you've got to feel sorry a little bit for Ross Embleton. He's sort of hurdle after hurdle after hurdle he's trying to cross in what is still an embryonic stage of his management career. You know, he's handled it quite well, hasn't he?
Listen, every time I hear Ross speak, my respect for the way he talks and the way he conducts himself goes up a little notch. He clearly has taken advice from the people around him regarding the situation. I generally feel that at that point that we had no idea we had COVID in the camp. And why would we? In all honesty, bugs are prevalent in the workplace all the time. And I think Ross was just trying to do his best to ensure that the people weren't overly concerned.
Yeah, I mean, I think just touching back on that testing, I do think now that the powers that be have got to bring in a weekly test, and they've got to incorporate the cost. I think certainly.
Andy, where's the money coming from, mate? £7,000 a week to do the testing.
Well, the costs are coming down and down, but I mean, I think that was it $1,500 that was quoted Spurs? Was it $1,500?
I think our chairman said £7,000.
£7,000.
Yeah, Nigel said it was a colossal amount of money, and
£7,000. Yeah,
with nothing coming
from
the turnstiles, you can't do. I mean. The Accrington chairman's been quite active again on Twitter this week, and I like him, and he says, our ground's paid for, this, that and the other. They play it the right way. I mean, like Nigel said at the end of his interview, he says, a lot of teams will go to the wall, he says, but I've been very lucky in life, and Leighton Orient will be okay. You know what he's talking about.
Yeah,
but I mean, not every team.
It's no good being the only survivor, though, is it? It's no fun. I mean, you need everybody to survive, really, don't we?
Well, of course, no. We as fans don't want, probably now, no team to go bust, because we were at the point of how close you can get. And when you've been invested a lot of your life watching a football team, whether good or bad, you gain friends galore, and your experiences, and it's life experiences growing up. You see all your mates' boys grow up, because that's the type of football club we are. You support Orient because your dad goes, and you go along. I mean, I treasure every minute of my son going football. So we don't want to see any football clubs, even if they're your worst rival, because at the end of the day, if there ain't another 37, 8, 45 teams, what are we going to get? It's like the FA Cup. It's been devalued because of the way they do it now.
Yeah.
You can't have... I mean, we had the thing with Steve. He wants regional divisions. Me and Lee didn't, you know what I mean? We had a nice little conversation about it, because we'd rather sit on a train to Barrow, and Steve would like to get in his car and go to Crawley, you know? It's
I
don't want to see no clubs go bust through this. And what Nigel did say at the end about the government plea, he's box office, basically, Nigel, when you listen to him. Football should stand up and listen to these guys, because they've turned our football club around magnificently.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a lot to say, and I say they've been successful businessmen for a reason. You know, they can see the weaknesses, hone in on that, get rid of that, see strengths, build those up, and that's why they're successful businessmen. I mean, they see things quicker than the likes of us. I mean, we might spot them, but we're a little bit slower to react, and by then we've missed the boat. This is the problem, isn't it? But I say with the football clubs, I said to him about the business rates, but also with the rent. The landlords or the councils really need to step up and say, look, you know. I'll give you a little example. My wife's got a little small shop, and the landlady came in and said, I know it's been very hard, and she gave her a quarter's rent back, which I was amazed. I thought, wow, you know, mine didn't, but hers did. Mm. And it wasn't the amount of money, it was a token gesture. It was helpful, it was nice, but it wasn't life-changing or anything, but it was just a nice thing to do, acknowledging that there's a problem. And if landlords of grounds turned around and said, look, you know, I know it's difficult, I've got a living to make, but I appreciate, you know, the situation. let's look at a reduction in rent. And I'm not just dropping a hint for Barry Hearn. I'm talking about across the board here, with people, because you've got a lot of little clubs. I was going to try and get Paul Ward on the phone tonight, but I didn't have time to do that. I mean, he's assistant manager at Staveley. And a little club like that relies on 100 people coming in to watch it, the bar take functions in their function room, things like that. That's
and the prize money of the FA Cup.
Yeah, and then it's if they get through into the first round or something, But, I mean, it's all gone. They haven't got anything. They've got no money coming in at all. And these community assets have got to be worth saving, not just football clubs, rugby clubs, cricket clubs, they've up and down the country. Somebody has got to act and act quickly, because otherwise, it's going to be catastrophic, because the mental health of people will be affected if these places disappear.
We were talking earlier, I think Trevor asked Danny about the situation with the streaming, and it was Robbie Cowling, the Colchester chairman, that I think you were talking about, wasn't it, Trevor?
Yeah, that's right.
And Robbie Cowling's wrote a letter to the Prime Minister, and in it he's put a couple of really interesting points. One of the points he's really trying to hammer home is we need football fans back in the stadiums. That's his point, and I happen to agree with that. And what he has said is he can't understand how 300 people can get on an aeroplane and fly for 8 hours in a confined space, but we can't get foot. And the guy's hit the nail on the head, isn't he? He's right. He's what he's saying. So I think there's going to be a statement tomorrow by Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor, and it's much needed, because it's not just football. It's the arts, it's theatres, it's things.
It's never ending, isn't it?
And there are businesses that have been helped out that perhaps no longer need help. So we've now got to go down there. I'm not trying to get political, this is a football show, but my business doesn't need any help at the moment.
No, good.
And frankly, I wouldn't want to take it, because there's a bigger picture. So I'm hoping we can get to a stage now where the football clubs, the arts, the theatres, all the industries that are really suffering, get some more help come tomorrow. What I want to see is as back in, as we all do, we're all terribly missing this, aren't we? 6 months since we got the pleasure of watching us Bishop Stortford, and that's the only live football I've watched for 6 months. I think I speak for everybody. We want it back.
You want it back, but it's got to be safe, isn't it, Trevor? It's got to be safe for people to go.
But the thing is that we all got a little bit excited, because the club put out that you could have your bubble at six, and so if it's like the groups, we've got our Orient bubble now, whatever you like to call it.
And Trevor, can I just say to you that microphone, you're getting lower and lower. If you're on the television screen, you can lift the microphone up on that stand, and just lean into it. That's
it. Every Orient fan started making bubbles up, and then you can start seeing in that little chink of light at the end, and we had our six all lined up. Well, we could have been dotted anywhere over the Justin Edinburgh stand, but that's the point. We were sort of just being given a little glimpse of what we may get. And the latest announcements, regardless, it just takes a lot of working out of what they're trying to achieve, and there's been more than one analogy of that in here tonight, and it's going to, that kind of argument will ravel on forever. But sport's desperate, because even like during the war years, people going to watch sport was a big thing, wasn't it? I know there was all the arguments, they shouldn't be playing sport, but men went to watch the football and this, that, and the other, and it's
morale. It's morale, and it's a break of routine.
Just on your personal, the things I like in life are the pub, football, and travel.
You can't do any.
Can't do any of them at the moment. And it is. Don't put a part upon it. It's doing my head in. And all the lads and their wives, it's the same thing.
I mean, it's the same. I mentioned, without drifting too far off beam here, I mean, just coming down to do this is actually nice, because you get to see people. And,
It's escapism, isn't it? Football's about, as Trevor says, he's travelled. You'll have to come fishing with me, Trevor. We'll get you into fishing.
You won't get me into fishing. I can't think of anything worse. I don't know why you do it. I used to
fish years ago.
Jesus.
It's all right.
Just sit there.
I know. I see the attraction of that.
Has anything happened? No. Just go down a chip shop and buy a piece.
Anyway, should we talk about some current form? What would happen on Saturday if we do play?
Well, this is the thing now. I mean, seriously now, Nigel's said, we've got a side. Now, this is what we were touching on. Come on. I mean, they've got half the squads down with the thing. So what side would we put out? And I mean, we would have to put out pretty much a youth team, wouldn't we?
I don't know. And I don't think we do know any. I think picking up on what Nigel said, we've got a side, we can put it out. I'm not convinced that we wouldn't be able to put out a strong team. I actually go back to what I said earlier about the game on Saturday. We've got a good bench. We've got a good fit squad at the moment. We haven't gone into this pre-season, Louis Dennis aside, and I think Judd has had an injury. We haven't got, out of 25 players, we've got 23 of them fit. All right, half of them might have not be able to play because they're either got corona or they're isolating. But no, I think we should try and put a team out on Saturday. I think it's important for the game, the wider picture, that we try and do that.
Well, with 25 players in each League Two squad, okay, we don't know which five are been tested positive. I mean, if it was Sarge and Vigouroux, then we are in a little bit of bother, aren't we? Because you've got your two first-team goalkeepers. Until we know what and who. But out of 25 players, we only got to get 14, 15 on with you, Darren. You've got to play the game. Because otherwise you'd be setting precedents. Oh, we can't play this week, can't play that week. But it's the same for every League One and League Two club. You've got a 25-man squad. Sometimes you may be down to your bare bones. Just get on with it. Because there's people outside of your bubble in football that rely on hour and a half streaming to keep going. So I think in football's aspect of the social side, I know we can't go in, but to keep, oh, at least we've got to stick that on the telly. I mean, I'm going to pop down the pub before the game and then go home and watch it indoors when we've got the home game. Some kind of normality, you know, because basically on a personal level, I just go to work Monday to Sunday, whatever, and it's hard. There's people out there that find it. I just want a little bit to do on Saturday. So football's got to go on for sure. And I think whatever I put out,
did you see the fella put a tweet up on the internet somewhere, either a tweet or on Facebook or something, and he said, well, surely we've got a youth team. Well, if not, can we not? We've got time to sign up some season ticket holders. I mean, this is to play Tottenham Hotspur. And he was serious.
Wouldn't have been a good revenue, wouldn't it?
Well, I think the record score's 36.
I'm surprised Danny wasn't on that already.
I mean, I've read some things, but I mean, for goodness sakes. And he was serious.
I'm surprised Danny didn't offer. Any fans that want to play, you can pay. Dude. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah.
£1,000, you can play against Tottenham.
Well, more than that, wouldn't it? You know what some of those fans are.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe certain those fans who are quite vocal on these things, if they've been stuck out there and they realise how good our players are and being a professional sports and what it's all about, isn't it?
It reminds me when I was 25 and I got invited to train with some Hornchurch players, semi-pro, and me at the time went along thinking, yeah, but I'll be okay, you know, I'm reasonably fit. I couldn't get anywhere near any of them, so I pick up Trevor's point. It made me realise,
guys, it's time to say goodbye. It's been entertaining. It's been enjoyable. Thanks for your company, both of you.
Pleasure.
Thanks to Dave Victor for getting in touch. Thanks again to Danny Macklin for stepping up and taking some of the questions. We hope you've enjoyed the show. If you've been watching, and quite a few of you have, I hope you've enjoyed the first time around of these cameras working in here. And we've definitely all got faces for radio. I'm sure you'll agree on that one. We'll catch you next week. Take care, everyone. Stay safe. And let's hope we've got some football to talk about this time next week. See you soon.